Gildan Media, a division of Recorded Books, presents Better, Simpler Strategy, a value-based guide to exceptional performance by Felix Oberholzer G. Narrated by Michael Butler Murray. Publisher's note. This audiobook has bonus material. Please contact whomever you purchased this audiobook from to request the material. All figures, tables, illustrations, and charts referenced in this audiobook can be found in the bonus material. What difference is there between us, save a restless dream that follows my soul, but fears to come near you? Khalil Gibran. Preface. Strategy is simple. I am not sure this is the right sentence to begin this book. You, my listener, and I do not know each other, and I am concerned I may be creating a poor first impression. So let me assure you, I'm not prone to making grand statements. My world, the world of rigorous academic research that helps improve management practice, is all about careful reasoning. Our sentences begin with probably, and our numbers come with 95% confidence intervals. And yet, it is true. Strategy is simple. Seeing the simplicity in strategy is not easy. It took me many years and the guidance of great teachers and patient colleagues. Sharing the insight is possibly even harder. Fortunately, I have had much practice. I have been teaching at Harvard Business School for almost 20 years. It is a rare week when I do not have the opportunity to explore questions of strategy with executives and MBA students from around the world. What I have learned in these conversations is that it is liberating to discover the simplicity in strategy. As if by magic, you see past inscrutable business jargon and incongruent frameworks. All of a sudden, you understand how the very best companies achieve their exceptional performance, and why many others fail to live up to their potential. This experience, the freedom that comes with clarity, is what I hope to share with you in this book. It is a book about the financial performance of companies, yes, but I have no interest in proffering a collection of success stories. Instead, my goal is to provide you with a powerful yet simple way of thinking about business and the role of strategic management. Most books have many more authors than their covers lead us to believe. This one is no exception. I owe an immense debt of gratitude to Adam Brandenberger and Harborne W. Stewart, who developed the intellectual foundations for a theory of value-based competition. What author could make progress without close friends who patiently read early drafts and generously share insights? I am deeply grateful to Young Mi Moon, who helped me to capture the key ideas embedded in the core framework and find my voice for the book. Francis Fry, who collaborated on an early pamphlet on value-based strategy, as well as Mihir Desai, Hong Luo, and Dennis Yao, whose analytical brilliance can sharpen any argument. Amy Bernstein, Claudio Fernandez Arauz, Rebecca Henderson, Hubert Joly, Rafaela Sadoun, David Yaffe, and many of my colleagues in the strategy unit at Harvard Business School provided helpful comments. I also benefited from the help of the executive directors and researchers in the HBS Global Initiative Centers around the world. Pippa Tubman Armerding, Essel Chekin, Rachna Chawla, Carla Laranjera, Pedro Levindo, Fernanda Miguel, Anjali Reina, Nobuo Sato, Rachna Tahilyani, and Patricia Tomei all provided global insights and many examples of value-based strategy at work. This book would not have been possible without the hundreds of conversations I held with executives and MBA students in my courses. In particular, the participants in the general management program. You taught me how to think ever more simply and effectively about strategy and exceptional business performance. I would also like to thank Peggy Alptekin, my copy editor, who read the manuscript with exceptional care, Scott Baronato, the visual genius who brought my illustrations to life, and my editor, Jeff Kehoe, who was instrumental in moving the project across the finishing line. Are you ready? Prepared to think? Dream? Let us begin. Part 1. Exceptional performance. 1. Simpler, better. In the past few decades, strategy has become increasingly sophisticated. If you work for a sizable organization, chances are your company has a marketing strategy to track and shape consumer tastes, a corporate strategy to benefit from synergies, a global strategy to capture worldwide business opportunities, an innovation strategy to pull ahead of the competition, an intellectual property strategy to defend the spoils of innovation, a digital strategy to exploit the internet, a social strategy to interact with communities online, and a talent strategy to attract individuals with extraordinary skills. And in each of these domains, talented people work on long lists of urgent initiatives. Companies are right, of course, to consider all these challenges. Rapid technological change, global competition, supply chain disruptions due to climate change and worldwide health emergencies, as well as ever-evolving consumer tastes, do conspire to upend traditional ways of doing business. As the world's economies become more integrated, firms needed a global strategy. As technology altered consumer tastes and ways to satisfy them, it was imperative to rethink innovation and marketing. As the cost and utter unfairness of limiting workplace diversity became impossible to ignore, companies needed to find ways to build more inclusive talent pools and career paths. By responding to each of the new challenges, however, we asked ever more of our organizations, had even higher expectations of our employees, and required our complex strategies to bring about sheer miracles. I see evidence of such increased expectations everywhere. They manifest themselves in outstanding products, unbelievable experiences, and deals of a lifetime. But also in long working hours, seemingly impossible stretch goals, and harried lives. When I visit companies to do research and write cases, I rarely leave without being impressed by how much people accomplish in short periods of time, often with limited resources. But here is what surprises me most. Given the sophistication of firm strategies and the intensity of our work lives, I would expect to see impressive firm profitability at most companies, and more than generous compensation packages for nearly everyone. I see neither. Take firm profitability. 1/4 of the firms included in the S&P 500 fail to earn long-term returns in excess of their cost of capital. In China, this fraction is even higher, closer to 1/3. Think about it. How can it be that so many companies, their ranks filled with talented and highly engaged employees, have so little to show for so much effort? Why do hard work and sophisticated strategy lead to enduring financial success for some companies, but not for others? We have the most educated workforce in human history, and incredibly talented corporate leaders. Why does enduring success so often seem elusive? If you've ever wondered about these questions, this book is for you. When our companies fall short of expectations, we often suspect that we are missing some key ingredient. If only we had a better talent strategy. If only we had a more robust supply chain. If only we had a richer innovation pipeline. If only. And so we develop a talent strategy. Invest in business resilience, accelerate innovation cycles. As our strategic initiatives multiply, something unforeseen happens. In concentrating on all the trees, we lose sight of the forest. In a profusion of activities, an overall direction, a guiding principle, is hard to see. Any promising idea is an idea that seems worth pursuing. In the end, common sense rules. And strategy loses much of its ability to steer our businesses. In this world, strategic planning becomes an annual ritual that feels bureaucratic and less than helpful in resolving critical issues. In fact, it is not difficult to find firms that have no strategy at all. In many others, it consists of an 80-page deck that is rich in data but short on insights, fabulous at listing considerations, but of little help in actual decision-making. When I review companies' strategic plans, I often see a plethora of frameworks, many of them inconsistent with each other, but few guideposts for effective management. If the hallmark of a great strategy is its telling you what not to do, what not to worry about, which developments to disregard, many of today's efforts fall short. In this book, I argue that strategic management faces an attractive back-to-basics opportunity. By simplifying strategy, we can make it more powerful. By using an overarching, easy-to-grasp framework that is tied to financial success, we gain a common language that allows us to evaluate and pull together the many activities that take place in our organizations today. I have seen the effect of simpler thinking in hundreds of executives I have taught at Harvard Business School. These managers were familiar with popular strategy frameworks, and their firms had often implemented laborious planning processes to guide investment decisions and managerial attention. Yet in many instances, it was difficult, even for these accomplished professionals, to recognize how specific projects were linked to their firm's strategy. At best, strategy provided smart arguments for and against business propositions, but it offered little guidance on how to choose and where to focus. As a result, initiatives and activities proliferated. When no one knows when to say no, most ideas, brought forward by talented and ambitious employees, seem like good ideas. And when most ideas seem like good ideas, we end up in the hyperactivity that pervades the business world today. I honed my approach to strategy in response to the challenges that I observed in the classroom and in my capacity as an advisor to companies. In my experience, value-based strategy, the approach I describe in this book, is well-suited to cutting through complexities and evaluating strategic initiatives. The framework provides a powerful tool that will allow you to see how your digital strategy is, or is not, related to your global ambitions, and how your marketing strategy is or is not consistent with the way you compete in the market for talent. Value-based strategy helps inform your decisions about where to focus and how to deepen your firm's competitive advantage. The basic intuition underlying value-based strategy could not be simpler. Companies that achieve enduring financial success create substantial value for their customers, their employees, or their suppliers. The idea is best captured in a simple graph, which I call a value stick, figure 1-1. Willingness to pay, WTP, sits at the top end of the value stick. It represents the customer's point of view. More specifically, it is the most a customer would ever pay for a product or service. If companies find ways to improve their product, WTP will increase. Willingness to sell, WTS, at the bottom end of the value stick, refers to employees and suppliers. For employees, WTS is the minimum compensation they require to accept a job offer. If companies make work more attractive, WTS declines. If a job is particularly dangerous, WTS increases, and workers require more compensation. In the case of suppliers, WTS is the lowest price at which they are willing to sell products and services. If companies make it easier for their suppliers to produce and ship products, supplier WTS will fall. The difference between WTP and WTS, the length of the stick, is the value that a firm creates. Research shows that extraordinary financial performance, returns in excess of a firm's cost of capital, is rooted in greater value creation. And there are only two ways to create additional value: increase WTP or lower WTS. Strategy is conceptually simple, and simpler strategic thinking, I am convinced, will lead to better outcomes. Renew Blue. An example of the power of this approach is Best Buy, America's biggest consumer electronics and appliances retailer. In late 2012, the company was looking for a new CEO. Imagine yourself taking on this role. It seemed impossible to succeed. Best Buy, most of us thought, was doomed. Amazon had successfully grown its electronics business at the expense of Best Buy, offering consumers a broad selection of products and aggressive pricing. At the same time, Walmart and other big-box retailers stole market share by focusing on the most popular devices and appliances that could be sold at high volumes. Worst, perhaps, was the growing trend among customers to showroom, that is, to visit stores to decide which products they liked and then buy them online. Having endured this onslaught, it is no surprise that Best Buy performed poorly. In 2012, the company lost $1.7 billion in a single quarter. Its return on investment capital, ROIC, which had long been in decline but was still in the upper teens, plunged to minus 16.7%. "It was as if Best Buy was coming to a gunfight with a knife," said Colin McGranahan, an analyst at Sanford C. Bernstein. "Best Buy should be dead," titled Business Insider. Hubert Joly, a former strategy consultant and most recently CEO of Carlson, a hotel and travel conglomerate, took on the challenge. Recognizing the dire circumstances, Joly and his team devised a plan they dubbed Renew Blue. The core idea was to create more customer value by increasing WTP and improving price perception. Rather than thinking of Best Buy's more than 1,000 stores as a liability that made it difficult to compete, the company reimagined their role and turned them into assets. Going forward, the stores would serve four functions: points of sale, the traditional role, showrooms for brands that built stores within a store, pickup locations, and mini warehouses. Best Buy had allowed Apple to operate its own showrooms in Best Buy stores starting in 2007. Joly expanded the program, adding Samsung Experience Shops and Windows stores in 2013, and the Sony Experience a year later. Even Amazon eventually opened kiosks in Best Buy stores. The store-within-a-store concept provided the company with a fresh source of revenue and an enhanced shopper experience. Sharon McCollum, then CFO, explained, "When you look at the investments that our vendors have made in our stores, it is incredible. It is literally hundreds of millions of dollars." Vendors also subsidized the salaries of Best Buy employees who worked in their showrooms. Perhaps more importantly, Best Buy was now able to offer deeper sales expertise because the company's staff, dressed in vendor-branded shirts and supported by consultants, each focused on a specific brand. Not only did the store-within-a-store program benefit Best Buy, the company's vendors were also better off. By creating a more cost-effective way to reach customers, operating a store-within-a-store is less expensive than running your own store, and vendors can benefit from increased traffic. Best Buy lowered vendors' operating cost, and as a result, vendors' WTS. Using Best Buy's stores as mini warehouses proved similarly effective. Joly's team understood that the speed at which customers received new products was an important driver of their WTP. "It is hard to beat instant gratification." Traditionally, the company had shipped from large distribution centers. These were closed on weekends, and the inventory management software was decades old, leading to frequent stockouts and snail-speed shipping. Under the Renew Blue plan, products were shipped from the location that provided the quickest delivery, sometimes a distribution center, but often a store down the road. By 2013, Best Buy shipped from 400 stores. A year later, that number rose to 1,400, helping the company beat Amazon's shipping times for the first time. Customers also loved the idea of ordering online and picking up the products in Best Buy stores. Within a few years, 40% of Best Buy's online orders were either shipped from or picked up from a store. Joly and his team also reassessed the company's online presence. Like many traditional retailers, Best Buy management had perceived the internet primarily as a threat, a substitute for established ways of doing business. Best Buy had built an online sales channel, but it had done so half-heartedly. BestBuy.com provided sparse product descriptions, few customer reviews, poor search capability, and no integration with the company's loyalty program, Frustrated customers complained that the site often promoted products that were out of stock. All this changed under Joly. Rather than seeing the internet as a substitute, the company now regarded it as a complement, an investment that would increase the value of Best Buy's physical stores. Although most customer journeys begin online, many customers want to touch and feel the products before they make a purchase. Joly banked on converting store visitors into paying customers by matching, for the first time, online and offline prices. Even customers who completed their transactions online added value to the stores. When they picked up their purchases, they often ended up buying additional products and service plans. Recognizing that Best Buy's online presence was supporting store activity, the company accelerated its investment in BestBuy.com. In just a few years, the site came to rival leading e-commerce sites, and online sales boomed. By 2019, the company derived one-fifth of its revenue from e-commerce. Renew Blue provided Best Buy a new lease on life. Look at all the ways in which Joly and his team managed to increase customer WTP and decrease vendor and staff WTS. Figure 1-2. By 2016, when Joly declared that Renew Blue had achieved its goals, Best Buy's ROIC had climbed from negative territory to 22.7%, and EBT margins had doubled. The company's share price quadrupled in only 6 years. The Best Buy turnaround illustrates some of the key principles of value-based strategy. Companies that excel at creating value focus squarely on WTP and WTS. Every significant initiative is designed to either enhance the customer experience, that is, increase consumers' WTP, or make it more attractive for vendors and employees to work with the company. In other words, decrease their WTS. Initiatives that fail to meet this test are cut. For example, Best Buy eliminated its Amazon-like marketplace, an exchange that allowed third-party vendors to sell their own products, because it failed to create value. Companies that outperform their peers increase WTP or decrease WTS in ways that are difficult to imitate. Best Buy's most distinctive asset is its large network of stores. Skillful, impartial service provided in a brick-and-mortar environment is difficult for Best Buy's competitors to match. Amazon lacks a similar physical presence. Walmart is not known for high-touch service. Apple is disinclined to give impartial advice. Simplicity opens up room for creativity and broad engagement. Joly describes the Renew Blue strategy in the simplest of terms. Our mission is to be the destination and authority for technology products and services. We are here to help our customers discover, choose, purchase, finance, activate, enjoy, and eventually replace their technology products. We also help our vendor partners market their products by providing them the best showroom for technology products, both online and in our stores. No PhD required. It is plain to see. All that matters is customer WTP and vendor and employee WTS. Looking at Best Buy's turnaround, it is astounding how fast the company moved, how quickly it created and implemented dozens of initiatives, many more than I am able to describe here. The simplicity of the strategy is key if one is to execute at breakneck speed. Every executive, every store manager, every employee with an idea about ways to raise WTP or lower WTS can be sure that they are helping move the company in the right direction. Many of the most successful companies focus on their competitive position inside an industry, as opposed to the average performance of their segment of the economy. Joly explains, "If you remember, in the past, the message from this company was all about the headwinds in our industry. Today, we never talk about the headwinds. What we do has more impact, we think, than the overall environment." There are three reasons why this type of thinking is prevalent in companies that create exceptional value. A first is that in most industries, variation in profitability inside the industry exceeds the profitability differences across industries. In other words, your best opportunities are almost always in your current industry, even if it is considered a difficult place for business. A second reason to focus on competitive positions inside an industry versus industry attractiveness is that positive industry fundamentals will simply be reflected in the multiples that companies need to pay to enter an attractive industry. Finally, for companies that happen to be in struggling industries, a focus on headwinds is demoralizing, and it likely contributes to decreases in productivity. It's a virtuous cycle, says Jolie. Once you start winning, people get more excited, more confident. Best Buy's internal data show that by 2013, staff engagement was higher than at any point since 2006. Many questions linger about Best Buy's future, of course. Was Best Buy lucky? No doubt. I don't know any organization whose stellar performance does not, in part, reflect good fortune. Hugely popular electronics products, such as new generations of iPhones and video game consoles, surely played a role in Best Buy's turnaround. So did the lessened competition after Circuit City, Radio Shack, H.H. Gregg, and other smaller electronics retailers closed their stores. Sheer luck, however, rarely leads to exceptional long-term value creation. The best firms build on their circumstances, whatever those may be. Value-based strategy is not about the hand that you are dealt. It is about better ways to play. Will Best Buy be a long-term success? Time is generally not kind to high-performing organizations. When I examine companies that have created exceptional value, I find that the average firm loses about half of its competitive advantage over a 10-year period. In Best Buy's markets, Amazon, in consumer electronics, and home improvement companies like Lowe's in appliances continue to grow market share. In 2018, Amazon, for the first time, narrowly beat Best Buy to become the largest U.S. consumer electronics retailer. Relative market share is important in an industry where 80% of cost is the cost of goods sold. The larger a company's market share, the better positioned it is to bargain with its vendors. To win, we have to lead, acknowledges Jolie. While these dynamics are challenging, he is characteristically upbeat. We get 26% of our customers' electronic spending. That's embarrassing. If we get a third, it would still be embarrassing, but the growth for the company would be tremendous. Value-based strategy provides clear guidance on the potential sources of growth and the opportunities that promise to be of greatest value. A preview. In the pages that follow, I will take the principal idea that animated Best Buy's strategy. The long-term financial success reflects superior value creation, and explore how firms in different industries and business contexts have applied this approach in practice. Think of this book as a journey along the value stick, Figure 1-3. Part 1. Exceptional Performance. We ask why some companies are so much more successful than others. For example, aren't the home improvement retailers Lowe's and Home Depot essentially clones? How can it be that one, Home Depot, is far more profitable than the other? The answer, it turns out, has much to do with how companies create value for their customers, their employees, and their suppliers. It is surprising, perhaps, but true, nevertheless. The companies that perform best do not think about themselves first and foremost. They dream up ever better ways to create value for others. Think value, not profit, and profit will follow. Part 2. Value for Customers. Do you tend to root for the underdog? If so, you will love the story about the ways Amazon gained a toehold in the market for consumer electronics in fierce competition with then-dominant Sony. Sony had it all. The best e-reader technology, a stellar brand in consumer electronics, and a marketing budget the size of a small country's GDP. Amazon's edge? A better way to think about value for customers. Early in my research, I had an intuition that sales-driven organizations like Sony and companies that focus on WTP, like Amazon.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?